It's Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. Presented by the Windjammer Restaurant and Upper Deck Pub. Local, fresh, and Burlington's original steak and seafood restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Happy Monday. Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com, and streaming on the 101.3 ESPN app. I'm your host, Brady Farkas. We go up until 6:30 today, and then NFL football. And man, hopefully it's better played tonight than it was yesterday, because yesterday was ugly. Today we will have both games on, 6:30, Saints-Vikings. Then immediately after, we will go to Chargers-Broncos. So it was ugly yesterday, Jason. It was ugly, ugly, ugly in week one.
Yeah, it was, and I was very disappointed about the Giants, and I'm still disappointed.
You were disappointed about the Giants. I was disappointed about the Seahawks. They both laid an egg. Luckily for both of them, it was on the road. So, look, you want to win every game you play, but if you're going to lose, you understand you're going to lose some games on the road. You don't want to punt a home game, essentially, which is what both of those teams did on the road. If I'm a Patriot fan, though, I'm absolutely ecstatic today. Because I walked out of Thursday night's loss thinking, you know what? Maybe they're not the 16-0 juggernaut that we talked about. Maybe they're not 14-2. But I still think they're going to win the AFC East. But a lot of you walked out of that game despondent, thinking, man, we just got it handed to us on our own field. Well, when you look at the rest of the product that was put out there by your NFL competition yesterday, you have to be feeling pretty good. I hope that yesterday totally changed the tune for Patriot fans. I mean, when you look, these are teams that we expect to be playoff teams. Seattle was awful. Okay, the Giants were awful. Houston was awful. They were in the playoffs a year ago, too. Cincinnati, a team we've talked about maybe being able to contend for a wild card spot. They got shut out at home. Pittsburgh, in a win, almost lost to Cleveland, and they didn't play that well in that win. They needed some help from their special teams unit to escape Cleveland with a victory. The Cardinals were a train wreck in a loss. Detroit didn't play that well in a win, especially early. The teams that we expect to be good, or we think have an opportunity to be good, they were horrible. The Patriots, you have to be walking out of that game now thinking, well, hey, this is what the rest of the league looked like in week one. I'm feeling good about where we're at, and it makes what Kansas City did even that more impressive, because teams just did not look ready to play yesterday. I don't know how eight months of preparation for certain players and certain coaching staffs and certain teams, 8 months came and went since the last time some of these teams were on the field, and they just did not look ready to play flat out.
Well, they're practicing less, and Jason Seahorn, who was on with us on the huddle, brought up a good point. There's no more two-a-days. The guys just in general are practicing less. People are sitting out practice to, one, not get injured, and two, playing less in the preseason, and everybody's still shaking the rust off.
Yeah, Jason Seahorn, former Giants cornerback, he joined us in the huddle. If you missed any of that interview, you can find it online at 1013ESPN.com. The thing he said to me that was interesting is he said, look, the defense always has the advantage early in the season. Why? Because defense is more predicated on instinct, right? Just go fly to the football. Just go cover that guy. Like, remember the Titans, Denzel Washington goes to Petey Jones and goes, I just want you to get out there and cover 23. That's it. Actually, it was Coach Yost who said that. I want to get out there and cover 23. I mean, defense, we always talk in baseball at the beginning of the season, who's got the advantage, the pitchers or the hitters? You know, usually the pitchers are further ahead of the hitters. Well, in football, I've never really thought about that. I just expect these teams to both come out potentially firing on all cylinders. Why? Because they do spend all week getting ready. They do spend all offseason getting ready for that game. I expect the product to be better. But Jason Seahorn did bring up an interesting point when he said, look, defense is predicated on instinct and athleticism. Fly to the football, have a mentality. Offense is predicated on scheme, on rhythm, on timing, on understanding what another player is. You know, you're dependent as the quarterback on your relationship with a receiver, with a tight end, and sometimes that hasn't been built yet. So I thought that was a really, really interesting point.
And just in the case of the Giants, they clearly missed Odell Beckham Jr., but I like the fact that he didn't play, and I would have said the same thing if I was any other team about having a guy that was maybe not healthy enough to play. I wouldn't have played him yesterday, and the Giants obviously missed Odell as far as the passing attack was concerned, but it's a long season, and that's why really no team should be worried, unless you're the Jets, because they almost won yesterday.
you miss Odell Beckham Jr., but it's not a crutch. It's not a it's not an excuse. The Giants are too good and too balanced offensively to be so reliant on just needing him in the lineup. Because if he had played and they shadowed him and doubled him, and he only had two catches, which is a potential in every single game that they could shadow him, double him, give that attention. Well, you have other guys there that you have to be able to rely on. Sterling Shepard led the league in touchdowns from the slot last year. Brandon Marshall is an all-pro caliber receiver, or has been. Evan Ingram's a first-round pick. I understand that the attention Odell Beckham Jr. would garner would bring about more opportunities for those guys. But those guys on their own, with Eli Manning, a two-time Super Bowl-winning champion quarterback, that collection of players should have been good enough to overcome.
And offensively for the Giants, my biggest concern isn't the receiving core. It's not even Eli Manning.
It's the line.
It's the line, exactly.
I mean, and the line is where everything is predicated from, because not only does that line give Eli Manning time to throw, but that line also can allow you to establish some consistency in the run game. Said it on Friday, I've often thought that running backs do get too much credit, that it's offensive line driven. Yes, there are some running backs that are better than others, right? Some guys can make cuts that other guys can't. Some guys have visions that other guys can't. But, Jason, you're too young for this. But back in Denver in the early 2000s, after Terrell Davis left, the Broncos were getting 1,000-yard rushing seasons every single year from different guys. Mike Anderson, who was a former, man, I want to say he was a former military guy. They pulled him out. He ran for 1,000. Olandis Gary, who you probably never even heard of at this point, he ran for 1,000 yards. Then it was Clinton Portis. Everybody was running for 1,000 yards. Why? Because they had a great line. Okay? In Seattle, the team did need Marshawn Lynch, but when they had a good line, you saw it with everybody that they were able to run the ball effectively. The Giants only ran the ball like 15 times yesterday, and that's a problem. So you had an inability to block. You had an unwillingness to even try to commit to the run game. And if you can't run it all or even show the run, your passing game is going to suffer. Think about it like this in baseball. I don't have at this point in my career, I don't have a great curveball anymore. Okay, I used to have a great one. Now I don't have a great one. But you have to show it at some point, right? Like, I have to put another thought in the batter's mind that, hey, there's something besides a fastball or a changeup coming here. I have to give a different look, vary it up, just so that they are thinking about something else. If the Giants become so one-dimensional, you're not putting any other thought in the defense's head. So you didn't have Odell Beckham Jr., and you didn't run the ball. You didn't open up very many options for yourself any other way.
Eli Manning didn't look, he didn't look terrible. But again, like I said earlier, the thing about Eli Manning that bugs me if I'm a Giants fan, he's unpredictable, and he looks confused out there for like a 12-year NFL veteran.
If you're a Giant fan who's ripping Eli Manning, I have zero time for you. Really. You've won two Super Bowls. Think about it. That is the epitome of just ungrateful fan guy.
Like you told me I was ungrateful because I was upset that Cleveland was losing in the finals?
Yes. That's the epitome of ungrateful fan guy. If you're complaining about Eli Manning, take your two championships and go home. Okay? Because I really don't care. Think about how many Bears fans would like to have had Eli Manning's career. Think about how many Lions fans would have liked to have had Eli Manning's career. Think about how many Jets fans would like to have had Eli Manning's career. Don't talk to me about Eli Manning not being able to do the job. I don't care if he never wins another game for you. He's got you two championships, and that's more than most people get in a lifetime. So you can miss me with the Eli Manning takes, because he's a good enough quarterback to get you to the playoffs. He's got a good enough unit around him. He's got good enough pieces on defense around him. What he needs is the offensive line. I do not need to hear that Eli Manning isn't good enough or that you don't like Eli Manning, Giant fans. He's got two championships. Be grateful for that, accept that, and understand that the fault is not on Eli Manning. It's on the line. And if you want to take it beyond the line, then it would be on GM Jerry Reese, who put the line together.
Brady, who was the worst team yesterday?
The worst team yesterday was Houston. I've said it for 2 hours, and I'll say it again. Number one, the Texans made the playoffs last year and the year before. Number two, they played Jacksonville, who was the worst team in the AFC South every year. You had a home game. You had an in-division game against a team that you've been able to manhandle for the last few years. You finally had a healthy J.J. Watt coming back. You had DeAndre Hopkins, who you just inked to a long-term deal. Fan enthusiasm should never have been higher than it was yesterday for the Houston Texans. And the tragedy that struck Houston, the people that say, you know, really hard for them to play, it's really hard for them to play, I give them a free pass, I look at it the other way. In those moments of great tragedy, great sports storylines have been formed, okay? the Yankees didn't win the World Series in 2001, but the Yankees, after 9/11, they beat 116-win Mariners team in the ALCS, and they rolled right through them, and they got to the World Series for the city of New York. After Brett Favre lost his dad, he went out and put on Monday Night Football one of the best performances he's ever put out, okay, against Oakland. He threw for like 5 touchdowns and 500 yards, it felt like. After Hurricane Katrina, the Saints come back to the Superdome, and Steve Gleason blocks the punt on the first possession, and it goes in for a touchdown, and now that's the thing that's a statue outside of the Superdome. In those moments of tragedy, sometimes best the emotion has fueled a team so that it can fuel a city. And the Texans should have been that team yesterday. They should have played with an emotion and a positive energy that charged up the fan base, and they totally laid an egg. Losing a game is one thing. But losing a game when you got thoroughly manhandled, when you had everything to play for, and you had a whole city to play for to try to provide a smile for them, it was embarrassing what the Texans did. And shame on Bill O'Brien. Shame on Bill O'Brien, the head coach of the Texans, for benching Tom Savage in the first half. If you thought Deshaun Watson was good enough to take over in the third quarter, he should have been good enough to just have the job at the start.
What about the Colts benching Scott Tolzien then?
Scott Tolzien is a bench player. Scott Tolzien knows he's not the starting quarterback. He knows Andrew Luck is the starting quarterback. Even if Jacoby Brissett starts 4 games until Luck is the guy. I'm less concerned with that. But Tom Savage is a guy that you've stood behind at every turn here this season. You've said he's the quarterback. We're going with him. And you pulled him instantly. If he was so bad that you were willing to pull him that quickly, he never should have been starting in the first place. Tom Savage, maybe he's not a great NFL quarterback, but he deserved more than a half. He deserved more than the belief of the coaching staff for a half. Okay, if Deshaun Watson was so good to take his job that quickly, then Deshaun Watson should have had the job from the start. And Tom Savage, do you know how hard it is to play, how hard it is to do anything when you're constantly looking over your shoulder? I can only imagine now how Tom Savage felt. That Tom Savage was thinking to himself, man, I better go out and play great because Deshaun Watson could take my job by week 2. Well, no, it took him 2 quarters. It's an embarrassment on the coaching staff right there. I would have rather had him get beat 38-0 with Tom Savage, go back to the film and try to figure it out next week, and then maybe in week 3 you pull the guy out. But a half in here is ridiculous. It's absolutely embarrassing. It's absolutely embarrassing that you would do that to a guy. I hate when people that are given jobs don't have an opportunity to succeed. Okay, I hate Todd Bowles is going to lose his job for the Jets this year.
Yes, he is.
Todd Bowles is going to get fired. The Jets are going to go 1-15, 0-16, 3-13, whatever. It's not going to be much better, possibly, than 3-13. He's going to lose his job. And he's going to lose his job because the team lost. But there's no infrastructure around the team. There's no quarterback. There's no skill position players, really. They've sold off everything, and he's going to wear the hat for that, and he's not going to be there to try to turn it around. Hugh Jackson might lose his job in Cleveland if the team doesn't win after 2 years. We saw Rex Ryan get fired after 2 years. I didn't like that. If you bring the guy in to turn it around in Buffalo, then keep him there. Give him the 3 to 4 years that a coach needs to implement everything and get players in through the draft. If you put someone in a position, give them an opportunity to succeed. It's embarrassing that Tom Savage was benched a one half into the NFL season. If he's not good enough, then he's not good enough. But you gave him the job at the start of camp. He deserved more than a half. It's absolutely embarrassing, and that to me was one of the most disappointing things in the entire league.
I definitely agree. I don't understand it. It just,
you know, the other thing that's disappointing on a total side note, it's Champlain Valley Game Night here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. The other thing that's disappointing to me is that Fox continues to think that Rob Riggle is funny. Rob Riggle is not funny. Like, they got rid of Caliendo to put on Rob Riggle. Rob Riggle every time he comes on, I turn the channel. I do not. The Fox pregame show, because I'm a fan of an NFC team, that's generally my go-to. I watch NFL Countdown on ESPN from like 11 to noon or 10 to noon, get my first 2 hours there, and then I'll go to CBS and Fox and flip back and forth. Rob Riggle is just an immediate turnoff for me. Not funny at all.
Well, Frank Caliendo's great. There was no reason to get rid of him.
Nothing about Rob Riggle is good to me. So, I mean, you want to know the most disappointing things, you can have all the hot takes you want, but there's the hottest of takes. Rob Riggle, still in 2017, not funny in the NFL pregame show.
So we only got a couple minutes left here, but given the terrible product that we saw in week one, are we going to see that much better of a product in week two, or are we going to have to wait till week three or four?
Well, let's hope so, because it can't get much worse. And Arnie's the one who cares about the ratings. I don't care about the ratings all that much, but, I mean, the ratings can't be any good after yesterday. Ken Kreitz, the Cage Train, says Rob Riggle is also on a Dos Equis beer ad, and he can't believe it. Rob Riggle, just not funny. And Jamie, our engineer, texts in. He goes, Rob Riggle in movies is great. In the NFL, bad. Fine. If his career is great in every aspect but the NFL, then I don't need him in the NFL anymore. Notes real quick on the Patriots running back situation. Patriots, over the weekend, were rumored to have a lot of interest in Deion Lewis. I absolutely would not trade Deion Lewis. Deion Lewis is a guy I think this team needs, and maybe they need him to return punts. If he's expendable in the running back position where you're not going to give him a bunch of carries, and let him be a diverse guy in the punt and return game, because I don't want to see Danny Amendola back there at a risk of getting injured. I don't want to see Lewis back there because I don't want him to get hurt. But if you're not going to give him the ball, which they didn't really give him the ball a lot in week one, then maybe you could put him there. DJ Foster was on the Patriots practice squad, a guy a lot of people thought was going to make the team. He's being signed by Arizona. He's going to take a roster spot there in the running game with David Johnson now out. So some news there on the Pats running game. DJ Foster is going to go to Arizona.
All right, Brady, real quick. We've got two games tonight. We got the Saints at the Vikings and the Chargers at the Broncos. Who do you got?
Saints and Vikings. Saints at the Vikings. Man, a lot of road teams won yesterday. Actually, majority road teams won. I'll say this is one that the home team wins. Randy Moss is getting inducted into the Vikings Hall of Fame at halftime. I'll say the Vikings win that one. I'll say it's a low-scoring game. I think the offense for Minnesota or for New Orleans doesn't get it going. I'll just say they're another team that doesn't play well here in week one. I'll go 21-16 in favor of the Vikings. As far as the Chargers and Broncos, I like the Chargers a lot. I think this team, overcoming injury last year, they lost almost everybody. They lost eight games in the fourth quarter. I think they're definitely better. So I'll go with the Chargers to beat Denver on the road. Hey, thanks to everybody. Thanks to intern Lance, intern Devin, Arnie, Jason. I'm Brady. Interviews available at 1013ESPN.com. We'll see you tomorrow.